Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Book Wars podcast. As Kate does a weird wiggling dance thing in the background, we're actually recording on two different mics this time because Kristen is extra and bought us a second mic because she was disappointed in my ability, in my lack of ability to keep my face close to the mic. And so now we're like this, and this is the sound quality you get. You're welcome,
Hanukkah.
America.
It's for Hanukkah also.
And it's for Hanukkah. There's good chances of the first Hanukkah gift I have to have gotten Hanukkah gifts when I was a kid, right?
Oh my god. Did you know
No one loves you.
I feel like my grandma must have gotten me a Hanukkah gift. That has to have been a thing at some point. Definitely the first one I've gotten in like a solid 20 years, though. That I can guarantee.
Oh my god.
This is really sad. Well, anyway. Oh my god.
Happy Hanukkah. I heard you
It's not sad. I get Christmas
day.
Presents. We just don't celebrate Hanukkah. We're bad Jews. Anyway, I'm Chris. I'm here with Kate, who was dancing, is no longer, and Kristen, who is extra, and bought us an extra mic. And welcome to the Book Wars Pod. Today, we are reading more of From a Certain Point of View. We're reading the second group of 10 stories, Not for Nothing, by Muir Lafferty, through an incident report by Mallory Ortberg. And I'm realizing that I totally did not sit down with the book in front of me, so I'm going to forget people's names again. So
That's
just going to happen. We're rolling with it.
I still have mine. It's because I'm recording in exactly the same place as last week, like I do every week. It's right here.
We've just been, like, migrating all over the apartment trying to, like, get this recording thing to work out. So that's...
I mean, when you don't have a desk, it becomes harder.
Yeah,
and two hard. People.
We have a desk.
If we I have no two, desk.
Yeah. I'm very lucky. Now I have the book. And I also, like, haven't been reading this copy of the book, so that helps, too. I've been reading my digital copy of the book.
Nice. It's just there for posterity.
Yeah, this is my pretty. Support your local bookstore copy of the book. So
it's pretty. You had it at Powell's, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
I respect it. I'm really sad our copy of Canto Bite hasn't come yet.
We'll talk about that later.
We Maybe. Sure will.
It's in the outline.
It is in the... Kristen, I am so proud of you right now.
I didn't read it, but I did open it before you guys got on. So
baby
I
steps.
Look at it. I looked at it. I didn't look at it before we started, like...
You just said you looked it up before we got on.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I looked at it just not prior to when we started recording, really.
Oh, my fucking God. I'm so done.
I'm confused. Anyway. Cool. So let's jump right in. Let's talk more about, well, Tatooine.
What are we drinking?
God, I'm
Chris
so
is so bad at... You're
I'm
not
really
bringing
bad at bringing
us in anymore.
In. I'm just so excited. I'm raring to go. I'm ready to talk about Star Wars. Last Jedi comes out in a week.
Oh my god.
Last Jedi comes out in 2 days when y'all hear this.
Fuck.
Anyway, Kristen, what are you drinking?
I just woke up from a nap, which is why I'm in the bad daughter box today. Because I pass the fuck out after work today. I was so tired for no reason, as usual. So I've got a 365 Everyday Value Sparkling Water Lime, and then an Everyday Value Sparkling Water Orange. Both of those.
Sounds delicious. Like quite a value.
It's delicious.
It is quite a value. It's They're great. So much cheaper than LaCroix at the Whole Foods.
There you go.
Oh, I mean, I get my fake LaCroix at Giant for that exact same reason. It's like half price.
Yep.
It's like a 12-pack for, God, I don't know. Like
yeah, I think it's like three
four
bucks.
Bucks. Three it's bucks,
very
yeah.
Good.
It's math.
Excellent. What are you guys drinking?
We are drinking, I don't even know how to pronounce it. It's that mulled wine they sell at Trader Joe's every Christmas that's named like blah, 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 German shit. So and I literally, Chris, do you have the bottle somewhere handy?
Send me a picture.
No, it's in the kitchen, but it's on Instagram.
Oh, did
it
you
It is on Instagram.
It, it is literally on it. Instagram right now.
Okay, give me 6 seconds and I'll try to pronounce it. That's my favorite thing to do.
The font also makes it very difficult. The font is not...
Are there lots of umlauts?
No, it's just very elaborate gothic type, and so it just looks... I think the first letter is an N, but it also kind of looks like a U, and I was just like, what the hell? Anyway, it's not great, Bob.
Nurembergher.
All right, fine.
Sorry.
I'm also
I don't
eating
know the
dark
other
chocolate government dark chocolate covered peppermint JoJo's, in case anyone's keeping score.
Yeah, I think it says Nuremberger, but I don't know what the other words are.
Mm.
It's great.
Seems fake, but okay.
Right?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is Nuremberger, though.
Nice.
One in a row. Something. Okay. Are you both drinking that?
Correct. We are.
Kate, are you also eating JoJo's?
I am not, because those look foul to me.
They're so good.
They sound so... Ugh. They look really good.
They look disgusting.
That's a lot of white people nonsense, though.
Exactly.
Like, dip it in weird things. We'll eat it.
Dude, I hate that about fucking white people, like, eating cookies and shit. I'm just like, shit's soggy. I don't want that.
We're millennials. Oh, we need our sauces, okay?
We do.
That's not sauce. It's like tea.
We need our sauces.
I have no money because I spent it all on avocado toast.
And sauces. Yeah, avocado toast and sauces.
Is the avocado toast actually microphones?
That was a good one, Kate.
I know. I'm
No. Chris's microphone was on super sale. It was on a deal because we live in a capitalist society.
On a deal.
It was on a deal at the Best Buy.
That seems like a very Canadian saying.
I don't think it is. I think I just made it up because I'm being not brained right now. But anyway, let's talk about Star Wars before I say anything else that's incredibly stupid. I mean, I'm going to for the rest of the pod, but like, I would like it to be stupid and on topic.
That's fair. That's a good combo. That's a better combo.
Oh my god.
All right, so let's talk about Tatooine. One thing.
Sand.
Sand.
I got so much sand, it gets everywhere.
Hate it.
Of course. So many sand jokes. Irritating. Oh my god. So many.
Yeah, I'm proud that not a single author let being on Tatooine go by without a sand joke. Like, really, it's iconic, is what it is.
I'm so happy.
But one thing that we notice is that we get a lot of characters in Tatooine, like in this section, all in the same place, essentially. Like, we have three or four or five different stories of the cantina scene. We read Greedo last time, I know, the Luckless Rodian. This time we read Wooer, the bartender. We read the Mooftak in the Cluehorn Cantina Caper. We read Not for Nothing, which was the story of the Bith Cantina Band, everyone's favorite Cantina Band. We read You Owe Me a Ride by Zoraida Cordova, whose name is not Zoraida Solo, as I thought last week, because I'm a moron. We read I'm Missing One.
Bored in the Storm by, oh my gosh, his name just fell out of my head.
Dana Jose Older.
Thank you.
Yes, we read Born in the Storm. I feel like there's one more in the actual cantina that I'm missing. Ooh, Secrets of Long Snoot. As well, by Delilah S. Dawson. So there's a lot that happens in the cantina. And, like, one thing that I really noticed and kind of took away from this section, I feel like this is a good jumping off point for our discussion, is in the first 9 stories, 10 stories that we read, it was a lot of scenes and a lot of set pieces. And it was, you know, kind of your standard, every scene you get one story. Kind of more what I think we were led to expect from this book by some of the press leading up to it. But, you know, you had Ramis in the first scene, and then the second scene was Leia getting captured, and you had Tarvin. The third scene was Don't Fire, and you had the Sith of Dataworc. And then you get to the Jawas and the Sand People and so on. But this, it's all one scene and it's just different perspectives. And it really is kind of just Star Wars world building at its finest, because it's not just like telling you what happened, you know, one story at a time. It's giving you it's giving you a 360 degree look around the cantina at the same moment and listening to everybody's different responses to it.
Only half the cantina.
Well, the bar takes up half the room.
You know, it's what? True. Technicalities.
Isn't it a wraparound bar? I've been picturing it as a wraparound bar.
Kristen, don't contradict your father.
I don't think so.
Like, I thought there was like two sides of it. The bartender stands in the middle, and then there are beings on either side. It's fine. I'll go look.
I think there's a 0% chance that Wooer serves the people in the back of the bar.
That's totally fair. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I some of these this is I mean, another, just to talk about the form a little bit more, just because I super enjoyed it. I love short stories because when you're given a directive for a short story, it's anywhere between like 3 pages and like 15 pages. I mean, it can be, you know, we can talk about novellas and et cetera, et cetera. Kate's rolling her eyes, but
it's fine. I actually, it's cool. Yeah,
but I loved just like the varied styles and the varied lengths of all of the stories, because I mean, some were like super narrative where we got like a whole storyline, and some of them were not. And I thought that was just really cool because they're all bound in one book, right? I mean, we know they're all by different authors, but I think it's super unique. This book is super unique in that way, just because it is a collection of short stories. But I think that makes it really cool and fun to read. And yes, everything, I think this really was a lot of world building, and I love that it can be world building, but all of those things that I like, they're all world building stories for the most part in this section. But everything I said is also true. So they're all also super different, which is great. That's why, I mean, that's like in a nutshell why people who love short stories love short stories.
Yes. No, but in all seriousness, just to add on to that, what I enjoy is that because it's all different authors and who are basically writing about the same thing from different angles, it really works for me for this section where we're focusing on the cantina and we're focusing on Mos Eisley, because it's really capturing the frenetic pace of, you know, it's a city, right? It counts as a city?
Oh yeah, it's the capital of Tatooine, I think.
Oh my god, I'm like the dumbest. It's fine.
I mean, you're not. It's not that they don't refer to it as Tatooine's capital city.
I know, and it's also like kind of hard to tell because like they could only make the set so big, and so it's just like it looks like it could be smaller even though it's meant to be larger. Anyway.
That's true. Mos Espa in Phantom Menace like looks larger because they had a larger budget, but that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, it's true though.
It's both here and there, Chris.
It's everywhere because it's so big.
Oh my god. But you know, these kind of the kind of almost like character studies that we had in the first 10 stories really suited, the whole, we're out in the basically Tatooine's fucking countryside with where all the moisture farmers are and things like that. And it also allowed us to focus on the smaller details of imperial bureaucracy, which is another thing that we saw so far mostly in the first 10 stories. We're getting a little bit back into it, as we can tell, now that we're getting closer and closer to Alderaan blowing up. Yay. it's obvious that the stories are placed in chronological order, but there's something, I don't know, it just works, even though the choice of what order to put the stories in may not have been more deliberate than that. Just because I know when you're putting together a short story collection or a poetry collection, you want to put every piece in that book into an order such that, you know, it flows, themes build on each other, you know, it even though it's not actually a novel, like, it makes sense thematically, but it's, I don't know, I guess just having A New Hope as an organizing framework for these stories is still making this work, more or less. Anyway, that's my nerd ramble.
Good nerd ramble, Mom.
Focusing on the point that you made, Kate, about, like, kind of that moment when you enter the cantina, I've really hit on that moment in this, and because it's mentioned from everybody's different point of view. You have Greedo noticing, you know, the moron farm boy who's going to die. You have the Mooftak who thinks Luke is a girl, which is good for a laugh.
The fucking best, okay?
But that moment to me in Star Wars is kind of the moment where the movie goes from linear to just like dropping you straight in the world. Because you have Obi-Wan standing outside, this place can get a little rough. And then you go in and you immediately see 10 different kinds of aliens that you don't know what the fuck you're looking at, right? Like you have the music, which is just like kind of an assault on your senses in the first time you see Star Wars. A joyous assault, according to the Bith, but whatever. I did enjoy that they were like, we're the best musicians in the world. I'm like, all right, buddy. Keep telling yourself that, my guy.
In the galaxy, excuse the fuck out of you.
In the galaxy, yeah. Jeez, I was selling them short. But no, and like, I really felt like that here, because in the same thing, in the same way, the story felt very linear up to this point. We're seeing, you know, the Tantive, we're seeing the Jawas, the droids go over to Luke with the Sand People, get to Obi-Wan, going into Mos Eisley. But then everything explodes, and it becomes not a story, but an entire world in which, you know, our story happens to be taking place among countless others. And I feel like the book did an incredible job of capturing that.
There's so much shit going on.
Yeah, something I didn't really appreciate until I was older and actually, you know, of drinking age, la 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 la. I did not drink underage in college. No, I would never. Something I didn't really appreciate is how well A New Hope, that just like one cantina scene, really captures that kind of bar atmosphere, that dive bar atmosphere specifically. And, you know, it's such an iconic scene, but in the grand scheme of the movie, it's like, I don't know, we're in there for 5 minutes maybe. But, you know, it's fascinating how much lasting power it's had, that, you know, a bulk of the stories that we've read right now focus around Mos Eisley and that, and the cantina in particular. And the other thing I just wanted to touch on from your comment, Chris, is a lot of, especially with the release of Canto Bight, which again, we'll talk a little bit more about a little bit later in this episode. One of the stats that Tom, the assistant editor at Del Rey, noted is that most of the characters and indeed the protagonists in Canto Bight are non-humans. Certainly, very few of them are white dudes, which is awesome, but a lot of people have, we retweeted that, and a lot of people have responded being like, why doesn't Star Wars have more non-human life forms? Like, it's a huge galaxy, we see all these fucking humans, where are all the non-humans? And I kind of always feel that just the sheer variety of species and cultures that are represented in the Mos Eisley Cantina is something that we see there and not necessarily so much in any other part of Star Wars. And I really wish that more people creating stories for the franchise would kind of take that and just run with it, you know, just take that as a jumping off point.
And I feel like the books are the perfect place to do that, right? Because, like, as much as we would love to see movies that don't focus around human characters, like, that's really hard, and I think it's fair to say that we're not going to see that.
Why is that hard?
Because I think it's hard to make a mainstream blockbuster movie with a non-human protagonist. Like, I think the masses will be less interested in the film if it's led by a non-human. Maybe I'm wrong. I would love for people to prove me wrong.
I totally disagree. Okay. Just because, first of all, it's Star Wars, and second of all, one of the things I can't remember when we talked about it, but definitely during the first push of the Star Wars Representation Matters hashtag, is that for a very long time in Star Wars, and still now, honestly, non-humans have basically been proxies for people of color. I think people of color really identify with non-humans, especially because, you know, one of the criticisms that we and others have had of at least the screen media is that people of color are often buried under 10,000 layers of makeup and or CGI to become non-humans. And so I think, I don't know. I'll tell you this. If there was a non-human heading up a Star Wars film anytime in the near future, I would watch the shit out of that.
I mean, obviously I would too. No, I hope you're right. And I hope you're right even more so, because just looking at the cast of characters in Star Wars right now, if they're going to take a known, and I feel like it would have to be a known character, if they're going to take a known non-human character, you know who would have to be?
Jar Jar.
Oh, God. That is not who I was going to say. Now I'm upset.
Ruined.
Now I'm not going to let Kate hear it.
Oh, I want to know, though.
I don't care.
It's not fair.
Jar Jar, bitch.
It would be Harrison Dua.
Thank you.
I don't think people know who Harris is unless they watch the cartoon, though.
I mean, I don't know that they do either, but I think that she has enough of a backstory.
Why not Ahsoka?
Yeah, it could be Ahsoka,
sure,
too.
Ahsoka.
I think those are the top two options.
Eat me.
Yeah.
They're women, well, too.
And I think they're, and this is an interesting thing, because this is a whole, this is very interesting, because the thing about Ahsoka and Hera is they're both humanoid, right? So they're non-human, but they're also, we can see a lot of human characteristics in them. And I think, and I don't want to put words in Chris's mouth, but I can see how, like, the droid that has the microphone for, like, a face mouth, how, like, maybe he wouldn't be the best main character of a movie, but, like, Ahsoka would be. I'm being just ridiculous on purpose here, but I kind of get it. I mean, I think a humanoid starring in a movie would be a great stepping stone to then having, you know, some other type of non-human.
I'll tell you this. The people who were responding to our retweet being like, yes, we want more non-human beings in Star Wars films were people of color.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't arguing with that. I was literally talking just about the beings themselves.
With the mouth face microphone.
Yeah. What's that guy's name?
I literally don't know who you're talking about.
Are you talking about the medical droid in Empire?
I don't know. Maybe. Okay. No, I'm not talking about the medical droid in Empire. I'm thinking of when I was actually thinking about in The Force Awakens.
Oh, in Maz's cantina?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think he has a name. Does he have a name?
I don't know.
He's just random droid.
Great.
Oh,
anyway.
I literally thought you were talking about Master Plo, and I was like, excuse you, you know what his name is.
No, not Master Plo. No, the guy who literally has an old school microphone for a face. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, I have no visual.
I know who Master Plo is. It's fine. I'll send you a picture, Kate.
Okay. Well, at least we finally found a character whose name you recognize.
Oh my god, fuck. I don't know anybody's name. Doesn't matter. No, but I mean, I agree. I agree with both of you. But yeah, I mean, I think having humanoid, I think that's much more likely to happen than just a straight up non-human, I wish. I don't know.
I hope we get more alien representation along with person of color representation. I hope it happens. Let's make it happen, Lucasfilm. One other thing that I loved about the view of Mos Eisley that we get is that it is in fact the hive of scum and villainy that we have been led to believe it is. You know, we get the inside view of all these people, and look, I don't know if one could watch A New Hope and be like, they all seem really friendly. But, you get the view of, Wooer the bartender just being like, I hate you all. The Muftak being, shifty, looking where he's going to get his money from. Greedo just hating everyone. Everyone hating Dr. Evazin and Ponda Baba because they're annoying as fuck and, violent as hell.
And hating Greedo.
Those are my two favorite things.
Yeah, poor Greedo. I really like that all of the authors independently arrived at the conclusion that Greedo is a piece of shit sucker.
He does suck though.
Now it's canon. Now it's canon that literally everybody hates Greedo.
And thank God for that.
Let's make that into a cartoon. Everybody hates Greedo.
I also really liked how we got the kvetching about the storm, from the stormtroopers' point of view, about how little they wanted to be in, on Tatooine generally. I mean, that's not surprising.
I loved that story. It was so good.
I loved it so much.
So much sand.
Yeah, what's it called? Sorry, I'm just burping into the mic.
Born in the Storm by Dana Jose Older.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that was actually one of my favorite stories.
I love that one a bunch.
And it was it was super interestingly laid out. Wasn't it laid out as a...
He was filling out a form and he was sassy. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Workplace hazard. Gotta fill out this fucking form. BT dubs, I'm stealing this dude back and fucking off into the twin sunset.
I know. He loves Dubak so much.
I thought that was so cute.
I know. I was like, oh, he really, he loves them. I was like, man, is this the way, like, beat cops, like, look at police horse cops in New York, man? That's
oh my
very,
fucking
very
God.
Very funny.
You're fucking killing me.
Is that, let's, like, of course it's what I thought of.
Bless you.
I want to talk about the form a little bit, though. Like, was it hilarious to anybody else that of the, oh, I don't know, five or so stories, four, I think, four stories from the Imperial perspective so far, and three of them have to do with paperwork?
Oh, I was screaming.
Yes, perfect.
I was screaming.
I loved it.
I mean, I, every time I encounter one of those stories, Keeks, I just think of you, like, dealing with all the, these, like, fuck shit people, like, submitting help tickets at your job. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, thank you so much. I love that. I love that you do that. No, I mean, if I was really that, I would be, like, our benefits person, but, because, you know, U.S. benefits are just forms, forms for days.
That's accurate.
But.
True. But I love it because, like, and part of what I am really enjoying so far about this book is that all the authors came to, like, all these different characters with all these different ideas, and yet there's so much in here that's the same.
I kind of wonder, though, how much the editor was kind of working with all of them to make sure everything stayed more or less uniform. I don't really know the answer to that. Hey, Tom, if you're listening, if you're still listening to this trash fire and you haven't gotten sick of us yet, could you just, like, I don't know, let us know how that process kind of went, because I'd be fascinated to hear that.
Tom, by the way, is at Darth and Turnus on Twitter. He's a great follow if you're interested in the Star Wars books or just Star Wars in general.
Or publishing, honestly.
Or publishing. Yeah. That's an excellent point. But anyway, I had a point with my Empire comment, I swear. It's just really funny to me that, like, the Empire's goal is, like, order, right? That's its stated, like, obviously the Empire's real goal is for Palpatine to have power. But, like, the Empire's stated goal is order out of the chaos. And every single person who has contributed to this so far thinks that order means bureaucracy and forms. And I just, like, I feel like that's so telling about, like, what we consider evil in this world, you know?
Well, I mean,
oh man, that's not what I thought you were gonna say, and now I'm just laughing.
I mean, it actually goes back to, like, really old traditional themes, because if you think about, you know, when we say things are Kafka-esque, when we're talking about Franz Kafka's work, we're talking about this. This is what we're talking about. This, the ridiculous of modern life. The ridiculous of modern life these days is sitting in front of a fucking computer, filling out stupid-ass forms, and dealing with, like, people who have no critical thinking skills.
It's true. It's so, and that's exactly what we're seeing here.
Yeah, Catch 22 also came up. I don't know if you guys read Catch 22 ever, but that came up a bunch for me as well in reading all of these Imperial stuffs.
Hot take. I read 50 pages of that book and gave up because I hated it.
That's fine. Like, every book. I was an English major and I just, like, have just books on my bookshelf that I was like, yeah, no, not for me.
No,
you like,
were.
That's a classic, but okay. Like, I'm useless. I'm the same way.
Listen, the best part is that you were an English major, but you were too lazy to fill out the fucking form to declare.
No. I wasn't an English major. Oh, man, that was such a Freudian slip. I was an English minor. No, I wasn't too lazy. I filled out the form to declare my minor. And then it was very peak. I went into the office and they're like, you're really close to the major. Do you want to just, like, do that? And I was like, no, it's second semester of my senior year. I need, like, four more classes. Absolutely not. And they're all theory. Like, I literally did this because you idiots made it so that English minors could get minors without taking any theory classes.
Well, fuck you, because those were the worst classes of my life. Oh, they were so bad. So bad. Oh, anyway. My gosh.
But yes, forms. I did put off, like, filling that out until the very last second.
Like I said.
Yeah, I didn't actually declare my poli-sci major until, like, junior year, I don't think.
Yeah, it's fine.
Oh my god, you are disasters.
Anyway, one of the other things, and then I swear I'll move on from Tatooine and what I loved about Tatooine in this, but I really loved how the progression of, like, the story content is very similar to the way the movie progressed. And what I mean by that is, like, obviously, like, yes, it started with the beginning of the movie and now it's in the middle of the movie. Like, yes, I am insightful. But in the first section, like, and granted, we had an arbitrary endpoint of 10 stories, but in the first section that we read, it was a lot of world building. It was introducing a lot of characters who had big dreams and, like, giving us a glimpse of their life and their thoughts, which is very much what the beginning of Star Wars is, right? You know, we see, you know, the massive scale of you open up in the space battle over Tatooine. You see Luke staring off into the sunset, and you see his dreams and how he's going to achieve them, right? But then in this section, it's conflict. It's having problems and seeking help. You know, in the movie, it's Luke seeking out Obi-Wan seeking out Han and Chewie, and them fighting with stormtroopers to get off Tatooine. In this, it's the Moof Tak is out of money. Greedo's angry at Han. Long Snoot needs to get home to Kubaz. Dana Jose Older's stormtrooper just wants a fucking do back already. Like, it's and even when we move to the Death Star, you have General Tag and Admiral Moti like arguing with each other, and Admiral Moti asking for like an HR intervention. And I love the fact that, I mean, I feel like it has to be intentional, but like they didn't need to do it like this, but it all worked out such that the authors totally ran with the change in tone of the movie and really worked that into the tone of their stories.
Yes. Yeah, I don't really have very much. It's, I mean, very much to add on to that, besides the fact that, again, despite the fact that this is a collection of short stories, it's following almost traditional story structure. You know, you have establishment, and then you have kind of rising action. Maybe we'll get some falling action later on in the book. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this charts out. But that is an interesting thing to note, Christopher.
Good job, Chris. You did it.
I feel like I'm talking this entire episode.
Uh-oh, it's okay. I need to, like, practice talking. I need to actually read the outlines before, and then maybe I'll talk more during the episodes, because I, like, really haven't been. But that's fine. It's because I don't have anything important to say, actually. So.
Oh, my God. Don't say that. Broski, you just...
Oh, my God. It's fine. No, I didn't mean it like that. I just meant, like, I don't want to be a white person talking for the sake of hearing my own voice.
But Crystal does it all the fucking time.
I know. Talk over me.
Okay, great.
No, please talk over him.
Anyway, but to build on what Chris said, I also really enjoyed that, like, we got a real sense. It was very, like, world-building in each story, but we also got, like, a very similar vibe. Like, this is slightly differentiated from what Kate was talking about, where we don't know whether or not, like, the character development between the stories kind of was intentional or not. We also don't know whether or not the world building between the stories was intentional or not. But I think they did a really, like, all the authors and the editor probably did a really good job of just, like, fleshing out this greater picture that we have of Mos Eisley. And I think also if you've read a lot of the Star Wars books like we have, I mean, we haven't read a ton of them, but we've read some of them on the pod. I think you also get kind of a more richer picture because you have more places to compare Mos Eisley to. And I mean, what kind of comes to mind is like in the Ahsoka book where, you know, we just have like this picture of people who are just kind of like scheming in the background of like their everyday lives. I mean, it's very different, right? They're farmers. They live that life. But just like the idea of everybody going to the bar at the end of the day to kind of like decompress and figure out what's going on that maybe, you know, they didn't see or hear about.
Right. This is why I'm so excited to read Canto Bite, because it's I assume there are going to be a lot of similarities in terms of you know, sleaziness and backwater dealings and all that stuff, but it's in just such a different atmosphere, so that'll be an interesting read.
It's out now, right?
It is out now. It came out yesterday as we're recording, 1 week ago as you're listening.
Thanks, Chris.
You're so, so welcome, Kristen. All right. Any more thoughts on Tatooine before I move us forward?
Sand.
No, if we have them, we'll come back. Yeah. It's very coarse.
Saw that one irritating. Coming.
I know. I felt really bad, though, for Long Snoot.
And yeah, Long Snoot.
He's on a bad planet for him, man. Poor babe.
Yeah. The Bith, too. Not a good time. Not a good time for anyone.
Fuck. Seriously.
Sand.
One other thing that I wanted to talk about was the concept of canon. And obviously we talk a lot about canon because the point of our podcast is talking about the canon, talking about what the canon Star Wars books are, and we don't deal with legends. One of the reasons is that we want to talk about the larger universe, and legends at this point no longer happened in the larger Star Wars universe. But this book is considered quote-unquote canon, but I want to bring back a quote from Kate's favorite member of the Lucasfilm story group, Pablo Hidalgo.
Oh, fucking goody. I'm so excited to talk more about Pablo.
I know you are. And he's at Pablo Hidalgo on Twitter, I think. I could be making that up. But one thing that he said around when From a Certain Point of View came out, maybe a little bit before, was that somebody asked him if this was canon. And the answer that we'd gotten up till that point, was yes, it's canon. And the answer that Pablo gave, I thought, was really interesting. And he said about half of it is canon, approximately. And people pushed him on that, and he didn't really explain. And my feeling on what he meant by that, and I want to know if you all agree, is that it's canon that everybody featured in this book is telling their story. But you can't trust narrators. And you can't trust, it's not necessarily canon that Luke is a girl, like the Muftak thought he was, you know? Like that kind of thing.
Fucking damn it. I'm so angry with you right now.
No, I mean, like, I get what you're saying, though. I mean, that is a really, he is the king of being fucking frustrating on Twitter for no reason. which is why we all love him so much.
God.
No, but really, like, that is why, if you're wondering why he's so fucking annoying to some of us, because, like, what kind of fucking answer is that? I mean, like, I know he does it to, like, rile us up and it works, and that's why it's annoying, but yeah, Chris, I think that's like a really like level-headed, smart way to think about it. But it's also weird that he was just like, half of it is. He could have just said like the stories themselves, like the character. I don't know. Whatever you just fucking said, that was a good way.
Oh no, it was definitely like I'm not going to give you a straight answer, like answer. It's definitely a non-answer answer, and that's kind of his MO a lot of the time. But I just like, I don't know. I like this concept of like point of view and like what is canon and what isn't canon, because like it's canon that all these people think these things. They're also not reliable narrators because they're scumbags and villains.
I mean, my response to that is just like, ooh, Pablo's using concepts that I learned in elementary school about unreliable narrators. That's so fucking brilliant. No, it's not, man. Like, it's like, I think it says more about the state of America's education that people don't understand that concept every time they open a book than how smart Pablo is. So whatever. But anyway.
All right. I tried, Pablo. I'm sorry. Pablo doesn't actually listen, just so everyone knows.
I'm also not sorry.
Whether or not he listens. Maybe he secretly listens. You don't know.
I'm pretty sure we know.
There's like no chance that he listens.
Fuck you guys.
All right, anyway, Keeks, leave that silence in. I want that awkward silence, like, hovering.
Perfect.
All right, so now let's talk about individual stories. Kate, let's start with you. Any stories that stood out to you in particular in this section?
A Born in the Storm is fucking hysterical. first of all. I loved it very much. I'm excited, hopefully, to see more things from Daniel Jose Older, because he's got a great voice, and he's it's unique, and I think it really suits the Star Wars universe, so hoping to see more from him. And
he is writing a secret Star Wars novel right now.
That is true.
Is he?
Yes, and
fuck.
Yeah, right? Friend of the pod, Shani Joy 26 and I are really hoping that it's a Lando novel, because we think he would be perfect for Lando's voice. And then the other one that I have to mention, because I was reading it last night and I started fucking screaming, is Lena by Will Wheaton, because that was the rudest fucking thing I've ever read in my entire life. Like, holy shit. I felt attacked. I did not need that emotional trauma. Like, it just, yeah, no, I just like put the book down and immediately like went on Twitter, because I'm a piece of trash, and just was like, Will Wheaton just ruined my goddamn life. So, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, I saw that. Okay, what was the other thing that you were going to bring up to me that wasn't Luke being a girl?
Oh, it was that the Tonica sisters, they said they ran with the Onaka gang for a little while.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Ooh. Yay. But yeah, anyway, that's me.
Bringing it back around.
God damn it.
Eggs all over. Yeah, Lena really fucked me up. So did let me pull out the actual table of contents. So since I'm so good with names, I'm thinking about the one about We Don't Serve Their Kind Here, Chuck Wendig's story. That really fucked me up too.
Mm-hmm.
In which, what's the barkeep's name? I'm so sorry.
Wooher.
Wooher, thank you. Wooher talks about why he hates droids, and it's because of the Clone Wars.
I know,
it's crazy. And also why he, like, kind of covers up for Ben. Obi-Ben. Kenobi.
Yeah.
Because he got saved by a bunch of Jedi. We don't know which Jedi. We know what planet he was on, right? Did we figure that out?
I think it mentions it, and I can't remember what the name of it is right now.
Yeah, I think it was one that we don't know.
Okay, just making sure. I'm like, is this something we can cross-reference? but anyway.
We know it wasn't Mace Windu.
Yes.
Wow.
Correct. Thank you.
Great.
Process of elimination.
I hate you so much, Chris. Yeah, so that one and Will Wheaton's story really fucked me up. I really, really liked Secrets of Long Snoot. I thought that it was just like really well done and really interesting, and from a super unique perspective, being like an off planet being that like nobody had ever really like seen or knew anything about, and just being like having such a different life on your home planet than you do now on fuck shit Tatooine. I thought it was just like really heartbreaking, really well written, and just a super interesting point of view that I don't think we would have really gotten otherwise.
Yeah, what I really loved about that one is that it really reminded me of an immigrant narrative. I remember, well, or at least what it brought up for me, is that I went to high school with this girl who is like legit from Vietnam. She had come over when she was 12 or something like that. And in Vietnam, her family was super wealthy, had all these servants, a giant house. Her grandpa was really, really important. Like, he was a really influential businessman. And then they came over here and they lived in a fucking like one bedroom apartment, her and her parents and her little brother. Like, anyway,
In New York, just to be clear.
Yes, in New York. And they live
not that reduces any of her story.
No, but it was context. Yeah, but no,
it was
a whole bunch of shit, and you know, they had to live right next to the fucking J line, so like she can sleep through a bomb going off now because the subway was always running past her house. It was like that.
Yeah, I really loved The Secrets of Long Snoot, and that's the one by Delilah S. Dawson. Lena, we're 3 for 3. Lena just fucked me up. It's just awful.
I also like the people. Sorry, just one more. I just remembered The Beth Rivas' story, friend of the pod, Beth Rivas, who is not a friend of the pod, but she has interacted with us on
she
Twitter.
Can be. She can be a friend of the pod if she wants.
Beth, it's up to you. You can be a friend of the pod if you want.
Oh my God, stop it.
But her story, Fully Operational, was super good. I thought she did a really good job talking about Vader and his fuck shit. And like explaining what everybody thought of the rebels and like tying it back to the Senate and Mon Mothma and all of that. I thought that was just like really poignant and super good.
I also like how that story gave a very good reason why, what is it? Taga, whatever.
We're going to go tag.
I don't know. Should I go all German super Nazi on the name or?
Taga.
Why he was like one of the only people to survive the Death Star explosion, because he was like basically playing chess while everyone else was playing checkers in terms of you know, weapon safety or whatever the fuck.
Yep.
This is true, although it does not end up serving him too well in the future.
LOL.
He does survive the Death Star explosion though, as we know, because he's in the Darth Vader comics. He doesn't make it past the Darth Vader comics. Minor spoiler.
You know what? We can give you spoilers, though, because Marvel's employing a bad racist man as a editor-in-chief, so...
Exactly. I also...
Oh, his first name's Cassio.
Yeah, I don't think he's German.
LOL.
I do what I want.
Cassio.
I loved Fully Operational. I really liked An Incident Report by Mallory Ortberg.
Yeah.
Just like... Admiral Moti is just like the shittiest, scummiest motherfucker. I am not a bigot. I pride myself in the number of religions we have on my home planet. But his open display of proselytizing was uncalled for, and he also choked me. Like, it was perfect. It was pitch perfect for this period in our history. It was pitch perfect for, like, white men in boardrooms everywhere when they're shouted down. Like... I had so much fun reading it.
Also, just perfectly encapsulating petty workplace bullshit is my favorite thing ever.
Yes. Yes.
That was my favorite part. It started with, it was completely uncalled for. Even if he'd been right, which he wasn't, he was wrong. That's beyond dispute. It was so good.
That basically sounds like me and Kate talking about Chris on the podcast.
Basically, yeah, accurate. I really enjoyed Not for Nothing by Muir Lafferty, which was the what was the name of the book? It was the book had like such a good name, but it was the autobiography of one of the modal nodes. Ichabel Gaunt was the name of the modal node. And it was just, I loved it because the tone was just such perfect, like reflective, like pseudo reflective Hollywood memoir bullshit. It was, I totally on purpose tripped Greedo. That was all me, and it was on purpose. Also, thanks, Jabba. I'll pour one out for you next time we see you. Editor's note: Jabba died, but the author insisted we leave this in there. It was really the two stories that were just like so tonally perfect were my favorites in this section. All right, well, I think this is a good place to wrap it up. Does that sound good to you all?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, before we get to what we're reading next week, we were remiss when recording our last episode. And as we've been talking about all episode this time, Canto Bight by four different authors came out this week as we're recording, last week as you're listening to this. And you should all go buy it. It seems super fun. It is it's not short stories, it's novellas, so you'll get a little more development if short stories aren't necessarily your thing. If full novels aren't necessarily your thing, then novellas also perfect for you. It's a great lead-in to The Last Jedi. We'll probably be reading it next year. We're not going to read it before the movie comes out, just because we're reading from a certain point of view.
We're reading a certain point of view, and it's fucking December 6th today, so deal with it.
Hey.
But no, go buy Canto Bight.
We like to give people time. We're not just being like lazy shits. To be fair, we all had from a certain point of view, like the day it came out.
Yes. No, we do like to give people time. And
library books, et cetera, et cetera.
I'll be honest. I'm not going to read Canto Bight, like, even personally before Last Jedi, because I like to go, kind of like we talked about with Phasma and Prince of Alderaan, I like to go into the movies, like, relatively blind the first time I see them, just because I personally have more fun like that. Y'all, everyone can do what they want. But anyway, go buy Canto Bight, support Del Rey and Lucasfilm putting out these kind of non-traditional Star Wars books into the universe, because they're super fun.
Yeah, get it at your local or get it on IndieBound.
I already, like, wrote Tom a love letter on Twitter being like, please do more of these because they are the best.
Yeah, no,
I didn't
totally.
Even know they were novellas. I'm glad I said novella earlier in the podcast.
Yeah, you really pulled that one out of your ass. Well done.
Wow. Woo.
Anyway, on to our next episode. We're going to be reading, continuing with From a Certain Point of View, reading Change of Heart by Elizabeth Wine through Time of Death by Kevin Scott. So those are the next 10 stories we're reading. Please read along with us. Talk to us on Twitter about how you felt about this round of stories, about how you felt about next round of stories. Just talk to us on Twitter in general, at BookWarsPod, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and email. BookWarsPod@gmail.com is our email. We love interacting with you all. We have a ton of fun with it. Kate has a ton of fun screaming at people on the Twitters. It's great. I occasionally Instagram.
I do something.
Allegedly.
I edit stuff.
Kristen does Facebook things. It's great.
I'm scared of Facebook. If someone understands Facebook and can help me, please let me know.
Kristen. No, Kristen, ask Swara.
Oh, yeah.
Swara will actually help you. It's
Swara.
True.
Yeah.
You're the best.
Friend of the pod, Swara Saleh. From Beltway Banthas. Anyway, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. It is the best way for people to discover the show, particularly as Last Jedi is coming out and people are really wanting to get more into the Star Wars universe. It happens every time there's a movie that comes out. People are going to be looking for more Star Wars discussion and more Star Wars world building. So rate, review, and subscribe and help us bring more people to discover the show. Thank you. That is our show. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. Thank you for listening to us talk about From a Certain Point of View on the Book Wars Pod. For Kate and Kristen, I'm Chris. We will talk to you next week, at which point Last Jedi will come out.
Fuck!
Woo!
I need to go get my slippers. My feet are so cold, they're falling off.